This episode of Chris Brown's True Stewardship is brought to you by Secure Give, the leading provider of safe and simple giving software for churches and charities that can be implemented through kiosks, online, mobile app, and text-to-give options. It's designed to grow your giving, save you time, and reach more people. Learn more at securegive.com. Ramsey Solutions presents Chris Brown's True Stewardship.
What if American households today got serious about stewardship? Not some old historic church word and not some fundraising campaign, but true biblical stewardship, managing God's blessings God's way for God's glory.
Welcome to Chris Brown's True Stewardship. Here's your host, Chris Brown.
Well, hello, folks, and welcome to Chris Brown's True Stewardship. This is a call-in show, so call in 866-357-3283. Again, that call-in number is 866-357-3283. And keep those emails coming in as well. Chris Brown on air at stewardship.com. We are all talking about stewardship, not some giving campaign. It's not recycling. It's not saving the rainforest. Those are all good things, but they are not stewardship. Stewardship is managing God's blessings, not just money, God's blessings, God's way, for God's glory. Every day, every hour. We're not striving for perfection. We're striving for progress. Every day, we need to get better at that. Okay, now folks, you hear me talk all the time about Financial Peace University. The bottom line is, stuff works. We've seen it happen time and time again. 4 million people have gone through that class. It's not a college. It's not really a university. It's a class. And if you're looking for a plan to get out of debt, we want to give you the best opportunity to take control of your money, even when you're busy. Anyone busy out there? When you're on the go, have a million things going on? Well, you can experience the same life-changing material in the class, but online and on your schedule with Financial Peace University online. So go to stewardship.com, learn much more about that. Again, that website is stewardship.com. That call-in number is 866-357-3283, and this first call comes in from Orlando. This is Ted. Ted, how are you?
Oh, bless. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, I'm honored. How can I help you?
Well, first of all, I would like to say bless you and your family for what you're doing. Been listening to your show from day one, and you are inspiring me so much to be a better father to my two boys, 10 and 6, and grow closer with the Lord. And here at the local church at Faith Assembly, thank you very much for what you're doing.
Thank you, Ted. I'm going to carry you around with me. I need to get that encouragement all the time. I love it. Thanks, man. Awesome. How can I help you?
My situation is a little different, I think. I have 8 years left, or we have 8 years left in our mortgage. I just turned 39 last month, and we're making $100,000, me and the wife together. So what's happening pretty much is we are in step number 4, 5, and 6, as most of the callers talk about.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, instead of paying off, I mean, we're doing an extra $200-$300 towards our mortgage, but my situation, I think, is a little different because I would like to stop working in 12 years so I can go full-time in the ministry as a financial coach. And I took the online course with you guys. In the future, I would like to take the two-day course that you guys have at the Ramsey Solution Place.
Mm-hmm.
So my situation is I put the RIQ numbers, and according to the RIQ, I'm seeing that it works if I contribute a little bit more than 15%. That way I can get, I have 12 years left of working, so I can contribute it towards my my 457 plan. Mm-hmm. And what I'm hearing from a lot of the callers here is that once they pay off their house, they usually contribute more towards their retirement for a lot longer period of time than what I actually have. Because in my case, I'm not, you know, once I pay off the house in my mid-40s, I'm not going to contribute for another 20-plus years. I'm just going to pretty much contribute as much as I can now, so in 12 years, I can have the money to have me to survive, and I can do my ministry full-time as, you know, giving to community, the church, and helping others.
And you think all of our listeners need to be aware of the phrase, in my situation. I think we got to be careful with that. What you're talking about with Financial Peace University, it's helped 4 million people, and everyone's had a unique situation. And we only know ours because we got this tunnel vision on what we're going through. I totally get it. And folks listening in, you know, maybe you're not familiar with everything that Ted just said. He talked about a lot of different things. He talked about baby steps and 4, 5, and 6 at the same time. And he talked all about RIQ and a lot of different things. And if you need to know more information about what we're talking about, go to stewardship.com. But we're talking about the prioritization over baby step 4 and baby step 6, which 4 is to invest 15% of your household income towards retirement, and baby step 6 is to pay off your house. And Ted's asking, should I invest more in baby step 4 than 15%?
Correct.
Because we recommend 15%. The reason why we recommend 15% is because we really feel like with all the different variables, you know, we want to find the perfect balance between getting to retirement as early as possible, not so we can be lazy, but so that we're not obligated to meetings and obligated to the whole everything that goes with having a job. We can actually add value to society without all the obligation. We can just do it on our own terms, which is kind of fun. So we want to make sure we get to retirement early so we can really live a life of generosity and have that kind of freedom. But also the balance between that and going into retirement with no payments, including no mortgage payments. Where is that balance? And as we have kind of helped millions of people balance those two things, we know that 15% is great. It's a great number when you know, want to make sure you do 15, then go to 5, then go to 6. Now, for you, it doesn't sound like 5's in play for you. Are you doing baby step 5 and funding college for? Are you doing that?
We do have $5,000 for the oldest one. What I was thinking of doing is the house should be paid off before my oldest one is going to turn 18. So I was going to cash flow the college. The younger one is 3 years younger. Within 3-4 years, we're going to cash flow pretty much both colleges throughout, you know, doing the community college and the state college, as you guys recommend. But my main focus was at 51, whatever money that I have towards the retirement, the Roth, we're doing the Roth at 5,500. I'm doing the 457.
Yeah.
The only concern is I want to kind of like concentrate more on spending missionary trips and helping others instead of getting another full-time job, because within 10 years I ran out of the savings.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a couple of things you're not considering is your increase in income over the next 12 years. And you're not taking into consideration the fact that once the house is paid off, you're going to be able to do some double and triple and quadruple investing.
That was my main focus, as if I contributed more towards, you know, 7 years prior, that contribution, a compound interest might help me a little bit. According to the RIQ, the numbers look almost double if I had 12 years versus 5 years being invested in that 457 plan.
Yeah, the thing that the RIQ, which is retire inspired quotient, which means what do you need to be doing every month to be able to retire? It doesn't equate for that making more money. It doesn't equate for being able to double invest later. So you're having a really tough time between comparing which one's going to be more effective and more fast and faster. It's very difficult to do. And here's the deal. Let's just say that they could be equal, or let's just say you're going to be ahead 1 year doing it the way that you're suggesting.
That's what's happening. I'm fighting myself.
I still would want to stick with the 15%, and I'd want to get that house. I don't want you going to retirement with a house payment. I don't. So if you're asking for an exception to, I don't feel comfortable. You're going to do whatever you want. Obviously, you're winning with money, Ted. You're an absolute rock star when it comes to this stuff. You're all over it.
Well, you guys are inspiring the most. You, Ramsey, and Chris Hogan, and you, and his daughter, Rachel Cruz. I mean, you guys are the rock stars. Are inspiring me, and I am focused, and now I'm growing closer to the Lord, and the church is like, I'm on fire.
Yeah, man. I mean, you are winning with money. You are killing it. So, for you, man, you know, in your scenario, I mean, you're going to win regardless. So, and you're going to do whatever you're going to do. So just know that we can, I guess you use the word inspire, and we can kind of guide you, but you're the one that's actually doing it. You were the one that went and said, hey, you know what? I'm going to $5,500. I'm going to put that towards my future for my Roth IRA contribution there. You did that. You're the one that walked down there and you're the one that wrote the check. So, dude, you're killing it and we're cheering you on. I'm not going to give you the exception, but you're going to do whatever you want, okay? Thanks for the call, my friend.
God bless.
All right, bye-bye.
We know that church leaders have big vision to impact lives, but usually don't have enough resources to make it happen. So if you can make it easier to create a culture of generosity in your church, wouldn't you do it? Secure Give is a leading provider of safe and simple giving software that can be implemented through kiosks, online, mobile app, and text-to-give options. It also has direct integration with the most popular church management systems, allowing automatic reconciliation. Nearly one-third of the top 100 churches in the U.S. use Secure Give. It's designed to grow your giving, save you time, and reach more people. Learn more at securegive.com.
Folks, you're listening to Chris Brown's True Stewardship. I'm your host, Chris Brown. All right, next up is Tommy. He's calling in from Cocoa, Florida.
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Is that just east of Orlando?
Yes, it is, just east of Orlando.
Oh, very good, very good. How can I help you today?
I just have one question about we had a debit card, had some fraudulent charges on it 3 or 4 weeks ago, and the process of reversing that's pretty graceful. They call you and, you know, say, did you make these charges? I say, no. They say, okay, we're going to deactivate your card, and we're going to refund the money, this and that, and all that's a piece of cake. But when you're my question is, if we're ever on vacation, an extended vacation, 7 to 10 days, with full of excursions and activities, if anybody ever did that, we do have one credit card. It's a zero balance credit card. We're all about the we'll be debt free in August. We're on baby step two, and we are doing well, and all of that. We haven't used this credit card in a very long time, and don't plan to, but. I'm hesitant about getting rid of it because if we're on vacation and my debit card is lost, stolen, or, you know, fraudulent charges, anything that would have the bank deactivate it, my trip, I've lost no time in just converting it to my card and swiping the card to get us through the vacation. And then when we get home, we could simply pay back the credit card with the budgeted, the amount of money that we budgeted for the vacation. I know there's a discipline there, and I know that I'm excited to hear the answer because it's going to involve not having the credit card. So, but it all comes down to convenience.
Yeah.
Because if we were out to dinner, and they said, "Did you do these charges?" I said, "No." They deactivate the card immediately. Obviously, you know, what do we do? I mean, my wife has a debit card, but just given the worst case scenario, maybe she didn't take it with her or something like that. So, is that the one reason why a disciplined credit card holder may hold on to that credit card, or is there a better answer?
Well, you know, you're asking somebody who is not in the middle on this. So, I've lived my entire adult life with no credit card. So,
right.
I have had fraudulent cards that happened to me in town and out of town with a debit card. And in both scenarios, I was completely fine. The scenario that you just brought up, you're at dinner, fraudulent charges, and now it's shut down. For that particular scenario, or say it's an excursion that you're paying for, that's why you carry cash also. Okay. So if it's going to take an hour to reactivate or 2 hours to reactivate, you can survive on cash for a while. I have not seen or heard of any differences between. In the early days with debit cards, there was a difference. Nowadays, the whole entire process is the same. The only difference I would say with these, the way they handle fraudulent charges, is that the credit card companies might be a little bit more sweet to you and kind of like, yes, sir, thank you for calling the concierge, because you're giving them a ton of money in interest every month, and that's the way they look at you. They see you as revenue producing,
right.
And a debit card, not as much, even though the banks do make a lot of money out of us holding our money in their savings account, and they make 10% on it, and we make 0.1%, but I'm not bitter. But anyway, the bottom line is, Tommy, Romans 13:8 says to owe no one anything except for the debt to love one another. And by using it in the scenario that you're talking about, you would be doing that. It'd say it's on the 6th of the month, and you'd be borrowing it from the 6th to the 30th till you paid it off. And I think, you know, there's not a tag on the end of that line that says, except for when you're on an excursion.
Right.
It just says, owe no one anything. And so if I'm in this scenario and I'm like, oh, I don't know, just go back to the scriptures. That's my filter. And so, you know, no, I'm not in the middle. And so, you know, I don't know if that's disappointing to you, but for me, it's clear cut on this one.
Well, I mean, yeah. And so the answer is just, you know, enough cash to get you by for that emergency.
Yeah.
You're not depending on a credit card. You are not in debt to nobody. You're not borrowing anything for any length of time. You know, even if it is a, you know, a situation like that, just have a pocket full of cash. But hey, I'm just looking at the worst case scenario, just waiting for that to happen at the worst time. So, but that's what we'll do. We're budgeted for the trip. So we'll just have a little, you know, extra just in case that happens, I guess.
Yeah. Try to visualize yourself when you are going through, let's say vacation, picture yourself looking through the windshield and your life is doing life through the windshield. You are paying for stuff that you're about to do. You're paying stuff for where you're about to go. And it'd be really awkward to be driving forward while you're looking through the rearview mirror and paying for stuff that you've done in the past. You're a windshield person now, not a rearview mirror person. So, but it's a good question. I totally get it. I get the wrestle, but I want to encourage you to look through that windshield. Got an email here from Pam. Says, hello, my husband and I own a 2-unit investment property that we've had now for almost 9 years. For most of that time, the units have been rented out. I know where this is going. But the past 3 years, between evictions and tenants not paying, the units are now empty. We haven't made any income in the past 12 months, and we're stuck paying the mortgage on top of our own home mortgage as well. I've wanted to get rid of the property long before now, but my husband says he doesn't want to. I'm feeling strapped with this property, and now we received a notice that the mortgage on the investment property will increase $235. How can I convince my husband it's time to let go? Thank you very much. Okay. Got to kind of tackle this from two different angles, Pam. One, I would talk to his mind. And I would talk to his heart. You've got to talk to his mind and talk to his heart. Here's what I mean by that. Start with showing him the math. Show him the on paper, the math, the pros and the cons of keeping it. It should be very glaring. Keeping it versus selling it. And then I would follow that up with finding out why. Why he really wants to keep it. This is the heart part. Why? What is it? What is it? Because it makes so much sense on paper. Why is it that he wants to keep it? It's obviously not math. Is there another reason? Is he possibly overwhelmed to even think about the process of selling it? Is it just an overwhelming process? Does he just flat out not have a fear to lose the property? You know what? Whatevs. You know, if I can't make the payment, it's all good. I don't give a rip. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe having this rental property makes him feel important. Maybe there's a level of like self-respect of like, I failed if I sold it, but I'm an investor. I'm a landlord. It feels good to him. You got to ask those questions to find out what is his main motivator. Maybe you already know that. And then I would follow that up, getting really deep to the heart and tell him how it makes you feel that you guys are in this spot. When you do that one, though, make sure that the timing is right. Okay, that could blow up if you choose the wrong time. So make sure that he's in a mood to hear it. And by now, you probably know how to read him. After that, I'm bringing in a third-party voice that says this is flat-out not wise, and he needs to take his responsibility seriously. When I say responsibility, I'm talking about 1 Timothy 5:8 that says anyone who does not provide for their relatives, and especially for their own household, has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. He is putting your family in a tough spot, and he needs to make the decision, whether he's overwhelmed or not, whether he has a fear of losing the property or not, whether he makes him feel important or not. The Bible says that we are to take care of our families, and he needs to do that. Okay, so that's what I would do. Hey, folks, I don't know if you've heard me say this on here. Those of you that listen regularly, you've heard me, but we are giving away some cash. You heard me right. We're giving away $20,000. Now, it's not my money. You guys know I'm saving up for a house. I'm giving away Dave Ramsey's money. I love giving away Dave's money. It's fun. Oh, my goodness. But let's be honest. We are all saving up for something, and we want to help you out. I don't know if you're saving up for your emergency fund or a vacation, but we want to give you some flow. $5,000 a week. That's what we're doing. We're giving away $5,000 a week, and you can enter once every day. So just go to stewardship.com, and there's a link there for you to enter. It's called the $20,000 Rainy Day Giveaway. Again, you can enter to win once a day at stewardship.com.
We're thankful to have you with us today on Chris Brown's True Stewardship. We want to hear your questions and your success stories. Every story, from your smallest milestone to your biggest victory. Email Chris at chrisbrownonair@stewardship.com. That's chrisbrownonair@stewardship.com. Or call 866-357-3283. That's 866-357-3283. Now we continue with Chris Brown's True Stewardship. Here's Chris.
This next call comes in from McKinney, Texas. This is Alexandria. Alexandria, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm better every day. How can I serve you?
So my boyfriend and I are planning on getting married in about 2 years. He says the proposal is coming soon. So he is currently debt-free and renting, and he has a part-time job and a full-time job. And I moved back in with my parents, rent-free, and I still have my last credit card and my car to go before I'm debt-free.
Mm-hmm.
So he is at a place where he wants to start looking for a home, and he has been keeping me very involved in the home searching process,
mm-hmm.
because one day it'll be our home.
Yeah.
So, but we don't want to submit a loan with both of our names because one, we're not married, and two, I'm not debt free yet.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, when we do get married, is it possible to put my name on the loan at that point? I don't know how that works.
Yeah. Well, you're going to want to have your name on the deed, but not the loan. It doesn't really matter if your name's on the loan or not.
Okay.
So you want it on the deed. And for me, my marriage, just where I'm at, I've been married 16 years. I don't even think I've ever really cared about that. I think when we say we're one flesh, we're one flesh, we're one flesh forever. But I think everybody in their, first, few years say that. And obviously the research shows that doesn't always happen. But I think you're going to be concerned about the deed more than the loan, unless he's super concerned about you having mutual risk on the loan, which I don't sound like. It sounds like everything that you just told me about was very healthy. So I don't hear anything like that. But I think I would ask the question of why. Why does he feel this need to go buy a house right now?
He wants to kind of, he's 28, and so I think he's at a point where he wants to start settling down.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also wants to move. So he's not sure if he wants to buy a house and then sell it in 5 years and move, or buy a house and rent it out and move. So mm-hmm.
Does he have at least 20% down?
He's working on it. He's not quite there. I think he's at 15%.
And he's going to get a 15-year fixed loan?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, good. All right, well, that'd be me. I just make sure that your name's, after you get married, that your name's on the deed, and I wouldn't be concerned about the loan. From a security standpoint for you, the deed's more important. You actually don't want your name on the loan.
Okay, good to know.
Okay. Your name on the deed and not on the loan is the best thing for you.
Perfect.
All right.
Awesome.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the call. All right, folks, got some really cool tweets that you guys have been tweeting in, and that word is still weird to me, but post, tweets, whatever. Austin Walker, at Austin T. Walker, says, Chris Brown on air and Dave Ramsey, we just made our final payments. At Callie Walker and I, we are totally debt-free. Thank you for all you guys do. Hashtag FPU. Pretty cool stuff. Kim Baker, the real Kim Baker on Twitter, says, Dave and Chris, great refresher and remotivator. She's talking about an event that we went to recently. And she says, we've paid off $231,000 in the last 3 years. A lot to go, but we won't quit. Pretty cool stuff. And Scott Gammel, at G-A-M-M Scott. That's his Twitter handle. He says, Chris Brown on air, thank you for the inspiration on student loans this morning. I guess he was listening to the podcast. He says, $26,000 down, $17,000 to go. Hashtag Sally Mae has to go. I love it. But thank you guys so much for letting us know about your testimonies and what God's doing in your life. And thank you for being so faithful as stewards and managing God's blessings God's way and for His glory. Folks, don't forget to head over to stewardship.com. Check out Financial Peace University online. Get on a plan to get out of debt, save, and budget wisely, and also invest for the future and doing it all on your schedule. Y'all, thank you so much for tuning in. It has been our pleasure. God bless you.